Lunch with Leon.
So welcome to another wonderful episode of Lunch with Leon. Thanks very much indeed for joining us today. Lots of exciting things have been going on since we met last, and I'm going to single out a beautiful Saturday warm evening, something we're currently recovering from, the Masters Summer Ball at the Worshipful Company of Carmen. And it was held at Middle Temple Hall here in the City of London. It was a gorgeous warm evening, lots of transport people at the event. And if you're interested in what's going on at the Worshipful Company of Carmen, you can find out loads more at thecarmen.co.uk. So we've had the mayoral and local government elections, so that's one uncertainty out of the way. Now there's just the matter of the general election itself. And as we record this, of course, we don't know when it's going to be, but we're pretty sure it's going to be in 2024. I do hope you read my blog piece on rail nationalisation. It links back to many of the discussions we had on this show, especially with Will Whitehorn recently. It's on LinkedIn, and there's a link to it on my website. That's leondaniels.co.uk. Please contribute if you'd like to. That brings us now to today's guest. Well, we work together at Transport for London, but today Joe Field is Chief Executive at JFG Communications, a leading public affairs and communications agency. But she also wears another hat, where she's leading a really exciting organisation.
Yes, Leon, that's right. I'm President of Women in Transport, and this has been a role actually that I've held for nearly 3 years. And I have one more year left of my presidency, but I've been involved in women in transport for much longer than that, since about 2013, 2014. So maybe I should actually just describe what women in transport is, in case some of your listeners aren't aware. And we are basically the leading not-for-profit and professional network that enables and empowers women in the transport industry to maximize their potential. And we create opportunities for our members for networking, for professional development, and we work across all transport modes and disciplines. We're a small operational team and supported by a network of volunteers. We've got about 125 volunteers across the country. I think it's important to say that we're open to everyone. Yes, we're called Women in Transport, but we're not just about women. I mean, actually, at one point when we started small and it was a group of women, you know, but you're not going to get anywhere just with women. You need allies. So I'm so pleased that we now have loads of men in our network, loads of men involved in championing our mission, and, you know, lots of corporate partners that we work with as well.
So I think we have made huge progress since you and I were together at TFL. There was the beginnings of a strong diversity and inclusion agenda over 10 years ago now. And I think the organisations are better for it, because we had some enlightened leaders, didn't we, who truly believed that the best way of putting together a team was to have a blend of people from all sorts of different backgrounds and education and thought process and gender and all the other stuff as well. So I think we've made fabulous progress, because what you've now done is to firmly put it on the map. And frankly, nobody dares now have a panel discussion or a group discussion or make a YouTube management video that's all white men.
Yeah, well, we do still see some, actually. But yeah, I agree. There's been a lot of good progress, and businesses and organizations within the sector, people understand the business benefits of diversity, and it's not just a nice to have, it's actually crucial to advancing the industry.
And you'd expect, wouldn't you? I mean, you might remember me saying this, the board of a company or the directors of a public transport agency or whatever, the makeup ought to reflect the makeup of the staff as a whole and the makeup of the passenger base. And we can't fail to notice, can we, on the bus network, that the majority of passengers are actually women. And for decades, it was run by elderly white men. And Now we've made, I think, a great change. And it's also fascinating, because I see it quite a bit on those occasions when you do get an all-male panel. There's always got at least one or two of us who'll say, well, we're not coming then, because unless it's a diverse panel, we're not taking part in it. I don't want to be seen on an all-male panel. So either you get yourself some other people on it, or I'm not coming.
Yeah, I think that's a really good thing to do, Leon, actually. And if everybody could champion that, if everybody could say, yeah, I won't come to panel if it's all white men, that will really help to just to break down those barriers.
I know. So I mean, great progress. And there are some strong women in some very powerful positions across the whole sector, including the permanent secretary at the Department for Transport. So clearly that's making quite a lot of it's making quite a lot of progress. But I always feel sometimes that we do 2/3 of the job, which is we do get women into strong management positions, but then we don't work very hard to keep them there. We climb the mountain and then sometimes let people fall off.
Yeah, I think that's right. And although you're saying great progress, and I think, you know, we have made good progress as women in transport, we've made great progress in providing support for our members in terms of things like our mentoring program and LEAD, which is our leadership program to support women into leadership positions. So yes, we have made good progress, but still only 26% of the transport workforce are women. And you're right, we do get women in, but then a lot of the time they leave. A lot of women leave infrastructure roles, you know, but before the age of 34. So it's an issue. We don't do enough to keep people.
And what's the answer for that? Because people leave jobs for various sorts of reasons. But the mortality rate, if I can put it that way, of women in the transport sector seems higher than it should be. What are the reasons for people leaving?
So we did some research, actually, and this is going back to the research was done towards the end of 2020, just during COVID. And because what we had identified was a gap that actually we didn't have any data to show what is it like to be a woman in transport? What are the issues? So we surveyed, it was almost 600 transport professionals, a mix of women and men. And we asked questions about things like their perceptions of industry culture, career progression, gender issues, you know, what it is like to work in transport. And some of the things that came out very strongly were that 69% of the women surveyed said that they felt the industry has a macho culture, and 70% said that the industry has an image problem. And 70% also said that they had experienced discriminatory behaviour or language, and this included sexist remarks, jokes, or statements targeted at them. So I think those things, macho culture, image problem, and also within that survey, because we were asking exactly the same questions to people who identified as men, and it did highlight statistically significant differences between women's and men's perceptions of gender issues. So for example, more women felt they had experienced discriminatory behaviour than men feeling that they had witnessed women experiencing discriminatory behaviour. So you can see that that does cause an issue if you've still got the majority of senior management positions held by men and their perceptions of women's experiences are very different than women's reported experiences. So those are things I think that need to be addressed.
Sure. And some of this is about enlightened employers as well, to be fair, enlightening employers. So employers need to learn some stuff. You don't necessarily inherently know this. You just assume you've got a happy workforce and all is going well. And you only find out it isn't when somebody takes you to court. So what can be done for employers to learn more about the sort of good practice that they should be taking forward in order to help this?
So I would say definitely get involved with women in transport, because we partner with employers in the industry. We partner with employers that are working to improve their gender diversity, that are working to improve the number of women in leadership roles. So definitely get involved with us, because we've got a range of resources that can help you. But I think also employee engagement is key. It's listening to your employees, putting in place programs and practices and policies that they say would support women. And actually, I've got a nice bus example for you, because I was just at the launch the other day of Go Ahead Women in Go Ahead, where Go Ahead are looking to recruit more women bus drivers. I think it's 1,500, an extra 1,500 by the end of next year, moving towards a 50-50 gender target gender split eventually for their bus drivers. And something that I thought was really nice about what they had done, they had actually started this program a year ago by creating a women's network. And what they had done was they had asked the women that they already had, what do we need to put in place to get more women to come and work as bus drivers? What policies and practices and things do we need to put in place? So that's the key. It's asking your employees what would help them. I think also reverse mentoring is very helpful. If you put a mentoring program in place, it should have an element of reverse mentoring. So senior people being mentored by more junior members of the workforce.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
And Joe, what about in the voluntary sector? Because in some of the places where I have or am involved as a trustee, effectively inside a charity doing good things, which is broadly male dominated because of the subject matter, the voluntary sector in many cases seems to be way further behind than even the regular employment sector. Would women in transport welcome charities, voluntary sector, etc., also coming on board to get good practice?
Yes, definitely. And in fact, we do partner with similar not-for-profits, I guess, like organisations that are led mostly by volunteers. So yeah, we do have partners that fit that, definitely. I guess the voluntary sector, and I'm not speaking about any organisations in particular, but if it's part of transport, then it will have the same workforce diversity issues that the rest of the transport sector has.
Indeed. And frankly, a lot of the people in these charities used to be when they were employed in the transport sector, which is why they're involved in some of these voluntary organisations.
Yeah. I think that just goes to show, you know, transport is, it's a career for life. Come to sector, you stay. And then when you retire, you want to volunteer in it as well.
Sure. So I happen to know that you've recently published your Women in Transport's Equity Index.
Yes.
What would you want the listeners to highlight in that, apart from, of course, going to read it properly?
Yeah, so this is the report. So basically, we launched the Equity Index last year because what we wanted to do was to create a benchmark for diversity, like to find out how is the sector doing in terms of diversity of workforce, policies and practices that are in place, and then to measure and track progress over time. So this is the first year report. And yes, I would encourage people to read it, but, you know, it doesn't paint a great picture of the sector, actually. So the things we looked at were workforce composition, diversity of leadership roles, gender pay gap, career development. We basically asked organizations to take part voluntarily, like, you have to sign up and fill in a survey. So of the organizations that took part, when combined, their overall score gave a rating of 50%. So this is on the Work 180 index, and Work 180 do this survey across lots of sectors. So basically, it shows that the transport sector has just moved into the ping range, which is just up from foundational. And where we're trying to get to, or where organizations would want to be, is pace setting at basically 80%. So we've only got this 50% score at the moment. So some of the headline stats were that 23% of the workforce identifies as women, but more than half of that 23% are in non-transport roles, so office-based roles. And 58% of the organizations who took part in the survey say they have a gender pay gap of 11% or more. So that's more than the national average. 54% of those organizations lack formal targets, commitments, or quotas for gender diversity. And 59% offer no support to primary carers in the form of paid parental leave. So, you know, there's quite a lot in there. Like most of the organizations, 94% say that they would be open to discussing flexible working. But I don't think, you know, I think the reality is that a lot of them are not so flexible. So, you know, it's not great, there's a lot of work to do. And, you know, some immediate recommendations for action are about being able to smash through this glass ceiling, put in place radical and impactful measures, champion industry-wide initiatives to empower women into leadership positions, but in particular, doing things like overhauling policies surrounding paid parental leave. So there's a lot that the industry needs to do.
Wow.
to To move forward.
Following you pulling those highlights out of your report, I'm beginning to regret saying that we've made such great progress. We have made progress, but that's because we were at such a low base that great progress simply gets us to a place that's not very good.
It's slow progress. I feel like the progress you were saying at the start was, you know, how women in transport has progressed and become, you know, I feel we're a powerful movement for change now, but we're still very much needed. It would be good to get to a place where you don't need an organization to champion gender diversity.
So your ultimate aim is to put yourself out of business by not being needed anymore, which would be...
No, I mean, I think we'll always be needed because we'll always need training and development and support, you know, and the things we provide in terms of mentoring and leadership and all the programs that support our members. There's definitely always going to be a need for those.
Lunch with Leon, in association with Passenger Transport magazine. Check out passengertransport.co.uk.
And is there a disparity between large and small organisations? You know, I'm just thinking, between the very small family businesses and the big corporates, because you'd expect the big corporates to have good policies, but I wonder if those policies translate into behaviours. And in the small families, I would guess that it's all cute and cuddly and they probably don't think they have to do very much, and possibly they do. So is that a terrible generalisation?
I think it's a generalisation. I don't have the exact data to give you, though, but I know that, yes, large corporates, of course, they are going to have the right policies and procedures in place. But the thing about a small business, I'm a small business owner myself, you know, Women in Transport, I do that as a voluntary role in addition to my day job. And as a small business owner, I know that we can put in policies and procedures much more nimbly and agilely than a big corporate can.
Okay. All right. So broadly, then, an enlightened employer has pretty easy access to lots of help on all the things they should do, both in terms of governance and actual practical things that they need to do and should do. The proof of the pudding is in the behaviours, not just the small print in the documents. And the small companies can do this quite easily. It's said from time to time, though, that it's a cost. So I would argue, well, there's two sorts of cost, cheap on the day and cheap in the long term. And I would imagine that morally and financially, avoiding untoward action, a reduced staff turnover, a happier workforce, a more diverse workforce, and so on, all of those things are long-term good things. But do you get much pushback on the grounds of cost?
I think there used to be more pushback on the grounds of cost because businesses didn't understand that actually there's loads of research to show that a diverse workforce is a more productive workforce. Diverse teams are far more likely to outperform their competitors. So actually, there's not a cost. It's actually better for your business to invest in diversity. And I think that's more widely understood now. And there's lots of things you can do to improve diversity and attract more women that, you know, don't cost anything, like looking at how do you word your job descriptions, make them more inclusive, make your job adverts more inclusive, remove personal details from CVs, have diverse recruitment panels, those kinds of basic things that still a lot of organizations don't do.
I saw, by the way, not in any business that you and I might be involved in, but I did see an application form the other day, and this is in the voluntary sector again, where the questions included date of birth, marital status. And I said, what's the point of asking marital status? You know, what are you going to do with the information if they tell you? I mean, if this is a middle-aged person who says they're single, are you going to conclude they have trouble forming relationships? Somebody had filled one in and very helpfully said they've been divorced since 1999. And again, you think, oh, so now the reader of that is tempted to believe that this person has some social ineptitude. And all of that is wrong, and you mustn't draw those conclusions. And the best way not to draw those conclusions is not to ask the question in the first place, which, if you were a proper employer, would not be allowed, because the 2011 Act, at least, I think, prevents employers from asking those sorts of questions, but it only applies to employers, doesn't apply in the voluntary sector. And it's outrageous that questions like that still exist on application forms. And frankly, that people had never considered it. And the real problem in all these cases is that by giving too much personal information, you are causing the person reading it to draw some conclusions, which, frankly, it would be better if they didn't draw those conclusions, because it's totally misleading and inappropriate.
Yeah, those questions were on job applications very regularly, going back many years ago to when probably I was not even working. But yeah, there's not a place for them now.
No. And that just highlights, I think, the level of ignorance that still exists in many places. And people think that they're keeping up with the times, as it were. But in fact, the fact that things like that exist just shows how far behind some people can be and how they've never thought. And I remember challenging somebody pretty well publicly, saying, well, how are you going to deal with your unconscious bias? This person said, I don't have any. To which the answer is, well, if you believe that's the case, then you clearly do, because truly believe you don't have any unconscious bias, then you are lying to yourself. And that's
the nature. It's unconscious, isn't it? The nature of unconscious bias. So everybody has biases.
Indeed. And the best way to deal with them is to confront them and say them out loud and work to antidote it, I think.
Yeah, and look at things that you can put in place, like unconscious bias training, or that's why the reverse mentoring is quite helpful, because that does really help to target any blind spots that you might have yourself.
For sure. So the report card broadly then says, from a very low base, things have got proportionately very much better, but the position where we've got ourselves to is that it's still not very good. So good progress, but loads more to do. What is the next phase of this? Having got to where we are, how do we get to where we want to be?
So we definitely, I would like more organisations to be involved in the Women in Transport Equity Index, because, you know, we've created this baseline now this year, we have the data. If more organisations can sign up, report their diversity statistics and work towards progress, work towards getting the sector up these rankings into something that's looking like pace setting, that's obviously important. We need to get more women into leadership positions, and that, you know, our LEAD program is really helpful for doing that. We've had some really strong results. Almost half the women that have been through that program have been promoted, so that's great. I think the other thing to talk about is intersectionality, because, you know, we've talked very much about gender, but it's not just about gender. It's about all the other protected characteristics as well and how they intersect with each other. And the report I was talking about earlier, the one we did during COVID, that actually found that women from ethnic minority backgrounds say that they have specific barriers to career progression. And that actually led to us starting up our intersectionality program, which is basically looking to unpick the relationship between power and privilege, and to look at how we, you know, what can we put in place to support all the intersections, all the protected characteristics, and to progress in the transport sector. So we're doing lots of things as part of that. We've got a book club, we've got a podcast as well, actually, the Women in Transport podcast, that's hosted by my colleague Shireen Ali Khan. So yeah, there's lots of work going on under that banner as well.
Yes, indeed. And we tend to forget that sometimes it's easy to become a one issue focus, where in fact there are lots of interdependent issues here.
Yeah.
And on the great range of things, as you say, women from other backgrounds maybe having a super version of what others are suffering from. Where would you point us for really good practice? Are there other sectors, so not transport, other sectors that have done better than we have? And I'm just wondering what we can learn from elsewhere.
So, yeah, I think we can. Sectors that have done better on diversity than transport are, I guess, sectors that are more gender diverse. And I mean, transport is just lacking, really, it's lagging far behind other sectors. So I think retail is good. And retail is a good comparison, because transport is a customer service business, but people don't always think of it like that. They think of it in terms of engineering.
No. I mean, transport, frankly, are highly perishable goods, because once the seats have departed, you can't sell them anymore. So it's very much like retail. And you will have heard me say more than once, of course, transport never properly became a retailer. It kept at least one foot in being a utility, you know, with gas and other forms of energy and telecommunications and so on. And because we never became a proper retailer, and we kept on thinking of ourselves as a public service, and now increasingly more government money, and therefore more government money equals more public control, therefore
more direction and less retail. And because we never made the jump to be a retailer in terms of selling our products to the passengers, we never made the jump to being a retailer in the diversity and inclusion area that we talked about, because we thought of ourselves as a bit like the post office used to be, or so we thought of ourselves as an arm of the government.
Mm-hmm.
And as progress was slow in a whole series of areas. So I'm not surprised to hear you say that retail is a good example, because retail, we never made the jump to retail we should have done.
Yeah, I agree. And that's something that definitely could be worked on better. And we also have, so there's an industry, well, it's a government and industry initiative called TEST. Have you heard of that?
Don't think so.
So that's the Transport Employment Skills Task Force, and it's led by Rachel Skinner, who's she's our patron, and that is Sonia, who's our chief exec. She also sits on the board of that, and our members have contributed to the call for evidence and views. But basically, one of the things that's looking at is how do we promote transport careers, and also how do we improve workforce diversity. So that's a good industry-led initiative in partnership with government that's going on. So hopefully that will get us to that next phase.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that, Joe, because what you're doing from where I'm sat has just been amazing. But as you said, like a ton more things to do, and there are still corners of our industry that are way behind where they should be. And I know that you'll carry on being super energetic across the whole sector, trying to make that progress that we all agree. So maybe we'll come back for another lunch in a year or so and talk about how much progress might have been made and what else we could do, because it's really so valuable. So I'm really, really pleased. So my guest on Lunch with Leon today has been Joe Field. You'll find Joe at JFG Communications. That's jfgcoms.co.uk, where she's the founder and chief executive. But today we've been talking to Joe mostly about her role as president of Women in Transport. So you can find Joe at womenintransport.com. This has been Lunch with Leon, which is published in association with Passenger Transport Magazine. You can find them at passengertransport.com. Hope you've got all of those links. If not, you'll find them in the notes. Thanks very much indeed for joining us today. We'll be back with another super episode very soon. In the meantime, to Joe Field, thank you very much.
Thank you, Leon. It's been lovely to speak to you. We'll be right back.